On RN, this is The List and I'm Cassie McCullough. Is there a distinctive Queensland fashion style? Our next guests argue there is, and they've written a book about it. It's called Remotely Fashionable. Dr. Nadia Buick is a Brisbane-based fashion curator and Madeline King is manager of the Institute of Modern Art. Welcome to you both.
Thanks, Cassie.
Thanks for having us.
Well, Madeline King, to you the difficult question. What do you see as the contemporary hallmarks of Queensland fashion, this subtropical style?
Queenslanders are still noted for being much more colourful than their southern counterparts. This means that sometimes we're seen as a little bit embarrassing. You know, we might be the sort of less fashionable version of Sydney and Melbourne if you're to view Queensland in a pejorative sense, and many people do. But I think we still bring a sense of casualness to fashion, even at a high fashion level. And I think the best example of this in a contemporary realm is people like Easton Pearson. That's a label that is really putting the Queensland aesthetic on a global stage, you might say. And what they're known for is very colourful prints. The aesthetics that are referencing the Asia Pacific region that we're in. And I think this is really quite distinctively a Queensland thing.
Well, I think you did that very delicately because it's a difficult line to tread, isn't it? And I think in the book you describe the Queensland style as perhaps exuberant, which I thought was a great word, in opposition to the supposed good taste of dress styles in Melbourne.
And some might say over-exuberant.
Do you concur, Dr. Buick?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think that this sort of narrative that Madeline has outlined about, you know, the brashness, the exuberance, that's something that we just came up against again and again and again.
I think the thing is, in Queensland, we started out in the 19th century with a very small European population here. And so we didn't have the same number of dressmakers and tailors and boutiques that Sydney and Melbourne had. So what this meant was we didn't start with that scene of fashion that our southern counterparts had. At the same time, I think people who were living in the colony of Queensland, they were very keen to keep up with trends from the mother country, from England. And of course, this was in England at the time, it was Parisian styles filtered through the English lens that mm-hmm. we're trying to replicate. And it was often noted, you know, because we're receiving these styles secondhand, it might be through letters and correspondence from the mother country, or it might be from illustrated magazines. You're receiving this information secondhand, so your ability to replicate the styles sometimes might be a little bit off. So it might be, you know, a trim is a little bit strange, or a sleeve is a little bit different in cut. And those things, you know, would often mark people as Queenslanders when they went and travelled to Sydney or Melbourne, for example.
There are some extraordinary images of people. Well, in Bean Lee, I saw a family and they're all dressed up in that mid-Victorian high neck, hems to the ground, sitting photographed in this forest. I can only imagine what the temperature was like.
Absolutely. And one of the contributions to the book was written by Associate Professor Margaret Maynard, who is a very esteemed Australian dress historian. And she sort of talks a little bit about the fact that, you know, in the 19th century in particular, you know, if anything, Queenslanders overcompensated in their style because they were so concerned about being seen as fashionable and keeping up with the latest, not only national, but international fashions. So there's some fantastic photos, as you mentioned, the one in Bean Lee. There's one in Charters Towers of a group of women sort of sitting in an afternoon tea, and they all look like they've stepped off a sort of a Marie Antoinette costume party. Like, it's exceptionally elaborate. They're wearing wigs and things like that. So, I mean, that's an extreme example. But you do see, particularly in those earlier photographs, people who are exceptionally well-dressed.
Preserving some sense of, well, remote civility.
And connectedness. You know, I think this is where this idea of remotely fashionable kind of came from. You know, the remoteness of Queensland in those times was something that we kept hearing about. But still, this desire to keep up with what was going on in the world in terms of personal appearance?
Let's speed forward to the mid-20th century, where really the style, I mean, I think of the white shoes, the white pants that men would wear, and women, I mean, I can't help thinking of meter maids. But there comes a time where the lightly clothed, suntanned body becomes part of the tourism image of Queensland. How did that sort of spring to, and was it more daring than counterparts in southern states? Madeline?
I guess there's some sort of link between the early 19th century, mid-19th century, and then into the 20th century with this sort of tropical look, but it accelerated in the 20th century with some deviations. Tan skin, for example, was something that was not considered fashionable until the 1920s, and swimsuits before this time looked very different. They were androgynous and very unflattering. You had these big sort of full-length woolen swimsuits.
Yeah, that were knitted swimsuits.
Knitted, yes, which we can only imagine were rather uncomfortable.
They'll make a comeback.
Do you think?
Oh, yeah. Any minute now.
You've called it.
Yeah, yeah.
So in the sort of 1930s, I guess, was a time when we started to develop this tourism aesthetic that drew a lot on South Sea Island motifs. They were very kind of obsessed with this idea of the Oriental, which we might consider to reference Asia, but actually it was sort of all non-Western aesthetics, so it might be South and Central America as well. So anything that was seen as sort of exotic. Through the development of these sort of motifs for tourism imagery, we're sort of referencing other popular tourist destinations that have our sort of lifestyle and our beachfronts and our tropical environment.
So you might sort of, there might be the Hawaiian influence.
Exactly. The Polynesian sort of tiki style was was really huge at this time. And in fact, that influence continued, you know, in the 30s, 40s and 50s and sort of making a comeback now in many ways. So that was the sort of early development of this aesthetic, and that came into dress in a big way through Hawaiian shirts for men. There was this great newspaper article that was talking about how men were sort of outdoing the women with their startling bright shirts at parties. And there's this scene in the Gold Coast especially, where you have a lot of tourist population from southern states coming up. They might have bought a resort-style accommodation that they use over the summer period, and they're coming looking for expensive resort wear and beachwear. So there was then this rise of designers who were specifically catering to this tourist market with highly fashionable clothing that you could wear to the beach.
I noticed from your book that there's also a lot of Indigenous people represented. One picture I particularly love of an Olga Chambers of Cherbourg. It's a photo taken in 1930, and she's the most sort of sophisticated flapper kind of chick with a fan and a very slick bob with a bobby pin to the side. And, and also a lot of images of Indigenous women as debutantes as well. What was the to and fro between the Indigenous community and the non-Indigenous community over the period?
Well, it sort of complicated the relationship between Indigenous dress and European dress, in the sense that we have some misunderstandings, I suppose, about, you know, what Indigenous dress really is and how it was worn. A lot of our research comes from looking at photographs, and photographs are wonderful for many reasons, but they can also be a bit of a red herring, because photographs can be staged and they can be purposefully setting up a scene that didn't really occur in real life. And this happened a lot with portraiture of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in Australia. So they might have been pulled into these sort of European portrait sessions and dressed in a European idea of what traditional dress was. And there was also many images staged in bush settings where, you know, Aboriginal people were asked to undress for the purposes of the photograph. So it can be very difficult to untangle in that sense. So we had researcher Amanda Heyman write a piece for us looking at the history of Indigenous fashion in Australia. It's not something that's been written about a great deal, especially in the context of Queensland. There's not a lot of information available. So she tried to really unpick some of those murky areas in being able to read the evolution of Indigenous dress.
What we're beginning to see form here is a picture of Queensland as really drawing in many, many influences, not only ones that come from Europe, but, as you say, from the South Sea Islands, from Asia, from Indigenous culture as well. Does that continue? Is that sort of still part of the fabric of Queensland culture now, Nadia?
I think it is. And I think it's not only a part of Queensland culture. I mean, I think, you know, what we were saying at the start about the rise of fast fashion and global fashion, I mean, that's something that you can get a little bit despondent about. But I think that global fashion is characterised by a pulling in of all kinds of different influences from all over the place. And that is kind of what's fascinating about fashion, whether it's local or global fashion. In Queensland, you certainly see, you know, specific examples, as you say, of certain cultural influences. And I do think that that continues, you know, going back to what Madeline was saying at the start about a label like Eastern Pearson, which is a quintessential kind of Queensland label, they're very much drawing on all of those local and global influences for the clothes that they're producing in Queensland today.
Wow, it's fascinating. Well, thank you very much to both of you, and also congratulations on the book. It's beautiful.
Thanks, Cassie.
Thanks, Cassie.
That was Dr. Nadia Buick, who's a Brisbane-based fashion curator, and Madeline King, manager of the Institute of Modern Art. And their book on Queensland fashion is called Remotely Fashionable.